Hey everyone, here's another Patreon preview. This one is of the second episode of our Elizabeth Gurley Flynn series. It has been already such a good series. She's met basically every famous person of this time. It's really just been an awesome exploration of her life. If you want the full thing, become a patron at patreon.com/workstoppage. It's the only way that we get money for doing this. We spend a lot of time putting these episodes together, and it is really, really appreciated when you do support us. But otherwise, here is the preview of this week's Patreon episode, Solidarity.
So after returning to New York, adding to the list of incredible historical figures that she'd managed to meet, Elizabeth got a chance to see Mother Jones speak.
Cool.
And as she vividly described the horrors of the concentration camps that miners had been herded into by federal troops during the labor struggles out west, and you can look up some of the big fights in like Coeur d'Alene out in Idaho, or any of the like major massacres that occurred in Colorado. And yeah, the conditions out there were horrible. And as Mother Jones described them in her speech, Elizabeth actually fainted because of how intense these descriptions were. Also, I wouldn't be surprised if that also was dredging up, you know, memories of being imprisoned multiple times at this point herself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so after a few months in New York, they settled down. No, of course. Once again, Flynn and Jones moved, this time to Chicago, which at this point, really at the turn of the 20th century, Chicago was kind of like, really for the like end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century is like the hotbed for like labor radicalism. You know, you have like, that's why the Haymarket Affair was there and everything. The IWW convention was there for this reason, because you have like all the economic nexus lines, that being the railroads.
Right.
All running through Chicago, and Chicago also through its stockyards, feeding both sides of the country. And so Chicago as an industrial powerhouse was really kind of at its peak in this era.
They were also like building the city at this point.
Yes.
Like a lot of the urban development that composes the Chicago that we know today was constructed around this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the couple moved to Chicago, where Jack got a job shoveling coal, and she continued her work as an IWW organizer, even while pregnant with her first child.
Can't slow her down. Not for 1 minute.
That winter, tragically, unfortunately, the baby was born prematurely and died a few hours later, which obviously was a really awful experience for the family, and was also took a pretty big toll on their young and also already kind of dysfunctional marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the two of their like drive and obsession with organizing, a lot of time, like they didn't really get to spend a whole ton of time together, because like Jack would be off trying to organize his workplace while she's being sent by the IWW all over the country. And so really for a lot of the beginning of their marriage, they really didn't get to see each other a lot.
Well, and they're also like basically broke the whole time, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the thing. And then having, you know, you're about to have your first kid, and then this, you know, tragedy strikes and the baby dies prematurely. And that not only, you know, obviously is an awful experience in and of itself, but it left the family in debt for the medical bills from it. So they ended up actually having to basically kind of go out and really like almost beg like the IWW as an organization to give Elizabeth more organizing work so they would have a source of income to pay off the medical debt that they'd accrued. And this is all happening right after, you know, this horrible personal tragedy. But thankfully, they were helped out by a personal friend in the IWW, Vincent St. John, who was now by this time the head of the IWW, and who dispatched Flynn, I mean, as insofar as an anarcho-syndicalist organization has a single head, I believe technically general secretary, who dispatched Elizabeth on a Pacific Coast organizing tour, which would be paid and have a bunch of stops so that the young family would be able to pay off those bills. And so one thing, like Flynn's husband, St. John had been a miner from a young age, and he also had previously been president of a Western Federation of Miners local, this one in Telluride, Colorado. He had left the WFM after conflicts with some conservative elements in the union. and ended up rising rapidly through the IWW via his spirited organizing, eventually serving as general secretary from 1908 to 1914.
It's interesting that we see this pattern where people are super dissatisfied with their unions and then they find an organization like the IWW and they're just a rock star all of a sudden because they finally have the kind of support in an organization they need to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so as Elizabeth, you know, left on this Pacific Coast tour, her first stop on the way, of course, since there's no planes, you got to take the train all the way out to the West Coast first to do your tour. And so she started in Butte, Montana, speaking at an event honoring the anniversary of the founding of the Western Federation of Miners. And she describes in her autobiography that Butte was a tough place at the time. Smog and mine gases made the city a rough area in comparison with the otherwise verdant scenery of Montana. In addition to speaking to workers at rallies and organizing meetings, she visited the many mines and smelting facilities in order to talk to the workers there and to see their conditions. And after visiting with all of these miners and going to all these organizing meetings and, you know, rallying the workers, as she went to, you know, leave and continue her tour of the West, the miners actually got together and gifted her a gold locket in the shape of a miner's sifting pan in thanks for coming and speaking to them. And she kept that for the rest of her life.
I mean, that sounds like a very cherishable item. Like, mm-hmm. That's an amazing gift.
Well, especially, too, because it's like, that's... But also, it's just like you like show up and you speak and you move people that much just through that. Because like this wasn't even from like a long strike victory or something where you'd be like, we fought side by side for a long time together. And so, you know, we want to commemorate it with this thing. It's like this is a big gift. And it really, I think, underlines like how you know, special of an organizer Elizabeth was. But also, I think, like underlines how hungry for a way to express their political views, like a lot of these workers were, to have somebody actually whose arguments would resonate with them and actually would be advocating for them instead of, you know, a bunch of liberal bullshit, which is what they would hear from pretty much any of the other mainstream politicians who would ever come through town.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that.
And so from Butte, she set out for Spokane, Washington, on the way stopping in Kalispell, Montana, to speak to striking lumberjacks, which that one is, I feel like, very much of a time, because I'm sure you do have striking lumberjacks now, but it's a lot more like chainsaws and stuff.
Well, yeah, timber is just such a highly mechanized industry mm-hmm. at this point. It's people operating these gigantic... I was looking up what kind of timber mechanism would be best for snapping Elon Musk in half, and it I don't remember the exact model, but I sifted through a lot of different extremely large machines compared to back in this time where you expect it's a lot of like guys with hand saws, like heave-hoeing on either side of a tree,
the wibbly wobbly two-person saws that they use to make sound effects.
Yeah, the kind of lumberjacking that you really only see in competitions these days.
Yeah, exactly. And so while she was in Kalispell to talk to the lumberjacks, she met a traveling IWW band, the Overalls Brigade, who will be familiar to any of our listeners who watched the biographical film Joe Hill or mm-hmm. listened to our episode where we talked about it, because they are featured briefly in the movie. And in her autobiography recalling encountering the Overalls Brigade, she did have some criticism for their methodology because, you know, they would show up, basically they would hitch a ride on traveling freight trains going town to town, spreading the word of industrial unionism, the one big union bringing all working men together. But they kind of had like a one note act where they're like, this is our thing. And then mm-hmm. like she would note that like they really didn't coordinate with what was actually going on specifically in the local town and coordinate with the existing local like working groups. So they kind of just set themselves apart from it. And so like she really saw that as like one of those early signs that of like this excessive lack of centralization and like sort of ultra leftism that was exhibited by some parts of the IWW at this point, because she's just like, they have some good like political understanding, but it's like, you gotta, you got to work with people. You can't just show up and shout at them or play songs and then leave and hope and just imagine everything's going to work out. It's like, you got to find out what's actually going on in people's lives and help them with it.
Yeah. Workers don't necessarily need the Ringling Brothers solidarity and labor circus.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Ringling Brothers solidarity and labor circus is cool, but it has to be married to something. It can't just be that. So, and because, you know, she noted that frequently she would see this sort of these antagonisms between groups like the Overalls Brigade and some IWW locals and other community organizations due to like dogmatism or like sectarianism, where otherwise these organizations could have worked together. And so this incident in Kalispell really like stuck out to her as one of those things, you know, as thinking back on it later in life after having left the IWW about like, these were some of the like manifestations of some of the signs of perhaps some of the weaknesses of the organizational model at the time. So after, you know, traveling across the northern plains and eventually making it out west, Flynn stayed in Spokane through the end of the summer, getting to know the troubles of the workers there and speaking multiple times a week at the IWW hall. She noted in her autobiography that during her time in the West, the strong divide between the migratory workers in lumber, mines, and other like extractive resource industries who move from camp to camp, job to job, worksite to worksite, between them and then the settled workers in the cities, that gap was very apparent, she said, like as she, you know, traveled the country for the IWW. And one of the ways that the IWW helped to bridge that gap was through unifying actions like mass strikes, but also just like expressly political acts like the fight for free speech.
Which, I mean, also is something we'll remember from the Joe Hill movie because, you know, they were very much so adamant about how, you know, they are using their free speech rights, but they're being suppressed.
Yeah, exactly. So this was a period, you know, just before World War I, where as the IWW is starting to get bigger and more people are starting to hear about it, more members of the capitalist class are freaking out about the existence and growth of the IWW. Like, this is a threat. They're going to stir up the workers against us and we're going to lose all of our wonderful wealth. We have to get rid of these people. How can we criminalize them? And so they try all these different things to make the IWW illegal. Eventually, one of the things a lot of places settle on are these criminal syndicalism laws, which just basically makes advocating for like an anarchistic system or like an end to capitalism, it just makes it illegal. Which is like clearly a violation of the First Amendment, but like it doesn't, like this is one of those periods where it's like the country and the ruling class are so far to the right at this point that they're just like, yeah, it's unconstitutional, but who cares? So we're just going to like not take up any of the cases that would prove that until eventually there's a like schism within the bourgeoisie and then there's an opening.
Well, yeah, because the implication is always like you can challenge us on this, but would you prefer we just sent in the National Guard?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So another way that they were going after the IWW was not just specifically the criminal syndicalism stuff, but also like various ways of just making public speaking illegal. Because again, the whole thing where like where you don't have easy access to radios and a lot of workers don't have radios at all. So the primary way they're going to be able to get their news from any sort of radical organization is public speaking. So if you can ban public speaking, well, there you go. You can solve the problem. And that's really what made it so critical for the IWW to really fight back against these sorts of tactics. And so,
yeah, well, and nowadays they have, you know, different ways of doing that by like, you know, the ownership of, you know, social media being specifically in the hands of people who don't want, you know, communist and anarchist language getting popularized, and so it's commonly suppressed through algorithms, and so they have, there's a lot more covert ways of doing it compared to the more legalistic ways that are happening there.
Yeah. And so in the fall, Jack was sent back to Montana to organize in Missoula, and Elizabeth joined him there to work together as organizers for the first time. Their efforts were quickly embraced by the workers who passed through the town on their way to the nearby logging camps, and their success prompted the local capitalist class to get the town government to pass an ordinance banning street speaking. So the half dozen organizers in the town decided to fight back. They continued to hold speeches in defiance of the ban, and when they were arrested, with Jack Jones being viciously beaten in jail, Flynn and the remaining others put out the call for aid. Dozens of fellow IWW workers arrived in Missoula and swelled the jails one after the other, violating the ban on public speaking. Recalling the struggle in a speech in 1962, Flynn said,
quote, "I remember one big and strong lumberjack, frightened to death, went up to the box and read the First Amendment and then looked around rather helplessly for the cops. But the cops went elsewhere, so he read it again. And when he read it about three times, the policeman came along and yanked him down, much to his relief." End quote.
I love this image, though, because you have the guy who's just like really nervous. He's never done any sort of political action. And they're just like, okay, the point of this is you go up and you read the thing and then they arrest you because we get everybody arrested and then they can't hold everybody and they have to give in. And he's just like, okay, I read the thing, I get arrested. I read the thing, and I get arrested, and that's how we do it. And he goes up and he reads the thing and he doesn't get immediately arrested. He's like, shit, now what do I do?
It's not working. It's okay, just read it again. It's so funny because this is like literally a bit you would expect to see from like Nick Offerman's character in The Great North or something. Yeah. Just like a real dumb guy comedy. No disrespect to the lumberjack, but it's just funny to see a guy in this situation that he probably didn't grow up getting prepared for, you know?
Yeah, I love that, though. You know, like this incredibly big, tough guy is just like, talk on top of the box?
Yeah.
Bing came here and they dug their hole, drained the entire night sky to the ground below. Stars down there, oh, they shine like gold. Yeah, the money shines like pennies at the company store. Shovels, clean your gun, feed your horses on apples, make sure the whiskey's done. I laid the wire, I set the clock, boy, did I fly. Heard the Tommy knockers laughing when the blast filled up my eyes.